Retro cutoff. The last panel I did for Damien, it was like, this is post-lockdown, let's bring everybody together. Now I feel like this is going to like rip everybody apart again.
And all over again. You know, I like to impress people.
Yeah. Talking video games is fun. We're going to have a Q&A at the end, so we invite everybody to participate in that. Right now we're going to jump in and start introducing all of the panelists to my left. Well, I'm Philip Kelly. I'm nobody. I'm just here to talk.
Philip, come on. Come on, Philip.
I'm on a different podcast. I don't know any of these guys. he's the host of the Clean Comedy Podcast and also a... Did somebody say something? Okay.
You can't talk to the moderator.
He's the host of the Clean Comedy Podcast and also a co-host on Making a Geek Podcast. We have James Creviston. All the way down at the end.
Thank you.
How are you doing, James? Good.
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. This
fantastic.
Is awesome.
Next, we have a co-host of Retro Game Night Podcast, Earl Lawrence. Known by many things, he hosts LA Fashion Week, a trivia master of pop culture, and hosts two podcasts, Retro Game Night and Making a Geek, Damien DiCarlo. He's a gaming aficionado and a co-host on Retro Game Night Podcast, Michael Losey. Next, he is a professor of law and public policy at Pepperdine University. He is a Star Wars nut as well as an overall geek in all things in pop culture, Greg McNeil. And I think that's Pepperdine, isn't it? Yeah. It is Pepperdine, yeah. Slipped out wrong. He is a visual effects production manager. His works include Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes, Zack Snyder's Justice League, and Free Guy. Michael Armstrong. Yeah, well, we are all happy to have Michael here. Yes. So we're gonna kick it off with a really easy question first. Well, hopefully, we'll see. Defining what the word retro means in the gaming world. Is it purely about the technology, or does it also encompass a certain gaming era or style? I'm gonna open it up and see who'd like to jump in with their profound answer first. Anybody down there?
Stir the pot.
Retro gaming.
Let's do it. Okay. I'll volunteer first. I would say it's a little bit of both. We got 8-bit graphics, you get instantly transported to a different era. That's also to say that there's a certain time period where we didn't care about what resolution we were watching or what kind of graphics it was. So I would say both of those things, as well as just you were at the mercy of finding things out, i.e. Legend of Zelda. You had no way of having YouTube, so you had to just figure it out, as they would say, or you could possibly ask a friend or subscribe to Nintendo Power. So I'd say, yeah, I think that would be the best way I can answer it. I mean, I don't know, maybe Earl has a better answer too.
I think for retro, it's now. It's about the nostalgia of it, right? So like for me, my definition of retro would be the 18 and 16-bit. Depending on, I guess, how old you are or how young you are, it could be different where you never had played these consoles before. For me, it's that. You know, I was young and was, you know, right out of school, and it's just that feel. Like, you go home out of school and you want to play a video game, and it's, for me, it's the Nintendo. It's the 18 and 16-bit. That's my retro. It's the pixelated games. It's the sound that's so cheesy, but you still love, and you hear it, and you're like, boom, that brings you to a moment in the past. But that's all part of, you know, how gaming grew also, right? So there's also has to be an initial point about where you started off. And again, this, it's such a great, I think, the question that we have, or what we're debating, or what we're discussing today, it can, depending on where you're from or where, you know, you grew up or whatever, you may not have a certain console that someone may have played earlier, but now you can relate to it because now there's these remakes. So to me, retro is, it stems across all panels and all consoles, but mine would be, for me, the 18 and 16-bit gaming.
And I guess I'll jump in here, just as my co-hosts win first here. This is kind of where I think I disagree with these guys, and I'm kind of glad we're debating this
How
today.
Dare you?
Turning this mic off.
I know, right? It already happened. But for me, it's not really about the technology. It's really about the time that goes involved into these games. In a sense, I think of it more as a gaming era. And so, yeah, there's all these different games that you actually are seeing, you know, remakes of today. F-Zero 99, for example, is a good example. It's pixelated, right? But it's is that retro? I don't really think so. And so I'm glad we're going to debate this today. And again, I think to me, it's really time that increves. It's a generational thing to me, is what retro is.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to agree with everyone. So that's not very exciting. So I think the cutoff, in my view, is before the year 2000, or as the Gen Alphas and Gen Zs say, the 1900s, right? Which includes like 98. I think that one element of it, at least technology-wise, is are you using a cartridge or a CD, right? Which kind of gets us to around the PlayStation point in time. But then on beyond the technology, I also think it's a concept that evolves over age, right? So when I was growing up in the late 80s and early 90s, what you would call a classic car back then was, you know, 20, 30 years earlier, right? Whereas now, what you might refer to as a classic car could be something from the 80s and 90s, or even classic music is Nirvana, right? I'm 47, so when I was a kid, you know, it was the Beatles, and today Nirvana is as far back as the Beatles were when I was a kid, maybe even farther. I don't want to really do the math.
Yikes.
Please don't do the math.
Start doing math. I was going to say, like, I think for me, like, the cutoff is like PlayStation, the original PS1, and probably the first Xbox. That's like retro because that's also like childhood stuff, right? So you're like talking like late 90s, early 2000s, where you're getting that nostalgia that you have, right? And you're right, you're talking about like music. Like, I think classic is considered like 15 to 20 years old is classic, right? Considered like classic rock. So now like that stuff.
Cut his mic off.
Too. I know. I'm sorry. But we're like same vintage. So like, yeah, stuff that like I listen to now, like I go listen to like if you go listen to NWA, that's considered like old school rap, okay? Like, do you, like, that's insane. Because like when I was a kid, like Grandmaster Flash, that was old school rap. Now like we're talking about like, games, like the things that we grew up with, you know, Zelda and Super Nintendo and PS1 playing Ridge Racer, the original Ridge Racer, and the original Tomb Raider, for even goodness sake, is considered like classic stuff. So, I mean, yeah, I'm glad that it's like, it's an era that we grew up in. I don't know what the vintage is of the room, but if you're near like your 30s and 40s, that's like your era. And, you know, and we're the generation that got Game Boys, right? And so that's all retro stuff. Yeah, there you go.
See one guy doing that for Game Boy.
Yeah, that guy's super excited.
Got one. Look at that.
Who's a Game Boy fanatic? Like, seriously. You got a few. Awesome. Got a few. All right.
You all belong in the museum, by the way.
I mean, I agree with pretty much everybody, but I think for us, like, just the whole notion of retro gaming is kind of where the starting off point was. Where the technology we had at the time, what people have already established here, you didn't need the HD, you didn't need everything. Everything was new, and, you know, again, I felt like where video games had started off. And since then, we've grown and revisited, and, you know, the whole system and industry as overall has evolved. So I would say, as far as retro is concerned, it's just, you know, the starting off point and what everyone, at least in this room, as for the most part, from while I'm looking around, can reminisce as far as what they remember video games being when they first got started as kids.
I mean, this does bring up a whole other thing, because I heard someone say vintage, and I would say in television, which I grew up on as a kid, that's now vintage. That's not even retro anymore, I'd say. But that's a whole other conversation.
You talk about like knob TVs, like years where you had to hold it up, bro.
Yeah.
The cable box out of wire. Right?
Pong. So. You just have one thing, just move that little board around and hit the ball. So is there a specific point in the evolution of gaming graphics where you believe the industry definitively moved away from the retro aesthetic? And if so, like, why? Like, what do you think that jumping point was? Why do you think that was the change? Or maybe wasn't?
I feel this meant like this is for me. Okay, so this is a good question, by the way. For me, the PS2. I'll say why.
Okay.
The PS2 for me was the shift because we had it now into what could be more, I guess you could say, more fleshed out polygons. At the time, polygon was very harsh. It was really just sharp edges. And we had FMVs for the first time with PS1. Okay, we got that. And then PS2 was just, okay, let's put this all into a DVD-ROM, which is what that was. And then it became, let's really make this into like a home cinematic, you know, experience. So I'd say personally the PS2 and Xbox.
Yeah, I can get behind that. That makes sense. Because, yeah, the polygon age definitely changed a lot of the gaming pieces there. And we went from, again, like one of my favorite games, Ridge Racer. Dude, I love that game on the original PS1. That was like my favorite thing to play. And now go play original Gran Turismo, dude. It's not even the same. Like, we're talking a jump in evolution of gaming there. And yeah, dude, once you start changing the graphics from PlayStation 2, I agree. PlayStation 2 is probably the tipping point of where things go from Lara Croft having triangle chest to being full buxom woman.
Triangle boobs.
Dude, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not lying. Like, we all were like, triangles? What's going on? You know, and, but like now we see a full-figured, full-bodied person in a game. Where are you taking us?
Yeah.
Where are we going here? Next up, Leisure Suit Larry.
I am curiously aroused. Thank you.
I kind of
think I understand where you're going with this, James. And one thing I didn't mention previously of where my generational gap was, but for me, it's the PS2, it's the GameCube, and the Xbox. Yeah. There was one specific thing that happened just over 20 years ago, and it was the launch of Xbox Live. And that really changed, I think, gaming in a big sense. It went from inviting your friends over to just meeting some friends online, right?
That's true.
And I think that's one thing a lot of the new gamers don't understand nowadays. And what I did also notice, though, about that 20 years ago was this open world concept. And of course, that was possible with the 3D polygons and all that, right? So we went from this, the 2D, to the 2D overhead, to the 3D world, and then to the open world, right? Yeah. And I think that's really where that retro gaming cutoff is. That's happened, again, about 20 years ago. But if you're talking about graphics, I think that's kind of where you're talking about, right?
I always look at it as a graphic piece of it is what really changed and drove that. But I didn't even think about that. I want to talk about it later, but like first-person shooters, games like Fortnite, the open world concept, World of Warcraft, all that stuff definitely changed, and that would not be considered retro, but that's definitely a giant leap in gaming technology that we haven't got to yet. But yeah,
I think that just to center years-wise, right, it's I'm going to go back to my point around about the year 2000. I remember in the late 90s or mid to late 90s, I was playing a game. It was very polygon based, but it was a game called Cyber Strike. You had these like it was almost like MechWarrior kind of Robotech stuff. And it was online, and that was transformational. I remember, I guess I was a senior in high school, and I was hanging out at my girlfriend's house playing with her brother and ignoring her. And it was so wild to be online engaging with other people, and that was that's a transformational moment. It's a technological moment too, right? And you were on, you dialed in with a modem, like a 2400 baud modem. I mean, it was wild.
I feel old. Thank you
for that
one.
You're welcome.
But to add to that, you know, the retro piece, Doom, right? We're talking about graphics. Yep. You guys remember Doom graphics.
Oh,
you wouldn't have your Halo without Doom. You wouldn't have your Counter-Strike without Doom. It all starts with something, but I think, you know, when you talk about cutoff and the actual graphics piece, look at Doom back in the day to what we have now. I think that's where I want to say, that's the pixelation of your Doom cartridge or your Doom video game on Sega was that.
Well, I would say that, but then you have games like Minecraft and Roblox, which is that same kind of thing.
Yeah.
So like that's almost kept retro alive,
yeah.
Right? You know what I'm saying?
They're bringing it back.
100%. Do you have something? Come on, you got to add something to this.
Why do you have to involve me? All right. I'm just up here minding my business, just
panel,
agreeing with everybody.
Man.
I don't have any revolutionary thoughts here. But no, just as far as the whole technology thing, I mean, I just am going to revert back to what I said before. We got into gaming when it was at its just pioneering starting days. You know, Lara Croft with triangle boobs and, you know, simplicity. But I think originally there was a lot more time and investment put into the actual story of the games that we were playing. And then with the whole thought of online play being part of today's society, I think that kind of has changed things and has taken away the necessity for the law of the thought process or the underlying story mode of the games that we were experiencing as kids.
That's great. Talking about story and actually cinematics, I remember Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2 were like two big moments for me where I felt like an unbelievable shift, where it felt like I was playing a movie. They got Elliot Goldenthal to come in and do the film score, like, or the game score. He's a film composer. You know, there was just things like that that really kind of, I felt that shift. And it was really incredible growing up seeing that occur.
So you hacked my notes.
You
went into my phone and had
I did not.
Literally verbatim almost.
Really? Well, I mean, our next question is there a game that bridged the gap? That's where I was going with this. It was a nice little segue. Damien, would you like to be embarrassed first with the answer I just gave?
For me, and I don't know if anybody in the audience will agree, but when Mario 64 came out, that to me was like, okay, so we're out of this 2D thing, and it's real 3D. It's not Marble Madness 3D or Dungeon Crawler 3D. This is like a true 3D experience. So I'd say Mario 64 was that one bridge that everybody collectively was just like, holy crap, like this is a real thing now that the Nintendo system can pull off.
That's a good one. Anybody else have a game that bridged that gap between 8-bit to HD?
I think it was Resident Evil for me and the 3D play. And not only that, you could save your game. Back in the day, if you're playing an old school game, you start from the beginning and you don't have a save. What I did is, you know, mom's like, dinner's ready. I turned off the TV. The console was on, right? You leave the console on and it's just running. So by the time you get back, you're at the place that you had. Now that you could save, I think that's, you know, and that allowed for this game to go have more levels, because you were able to save at some point and not have to sit there for umpteen hours to just try to finish this game. But Resident Evil with the, you know, had that really cool
3D or you could have got a Game Genie back in the day and just hacked it so you could save your games, bro. That was, you guys remember Game Genie? We had a Game Genie. Anybody? Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
The first real cheat code, bro.
He's the cheater.
Game Genie, bro. I love that game. I don't know. I was going to say, like, I think, like, for me, it was like Tony Hawk. Like, Pro Skater definitely changed a lot of things. And then the original Fable on Xbox, dude. I think that was, like, the game where I go, we've stepped into a new world. We stepped into a thing that's totally different than what we had before. And we're coming to a cinematic gameplay. Yeah. Do you remember Fable? You guys, who played Fable? Dude, I love that game. You can still go back and play that game, and that game is amazing as it was, like, then as it is now. Do you have tier one? Do you guys want to play?
Yeah. I must have had the cool parents. I'm gonna go with Grand Theft Auto.
Dude, yes.
Yeah, you had cool parents.
Fair enough. Dude. You did have the cool parents.
In high school, GTA 2, it was like in computer science class, we'd finish our work as quick as we could just so we could play some GTA 2 after. And the next thing I know, though, again, it's the open world concept, right? And then once you got into GTA 3, it was like, whoa.
Yeah.
This is a whole new world, right? And it was a cool world, obviously, and you got to do cool things with it. And it was that whole open world, the sandbox, you know, how can I interact? And, you know, as soon as the ADD hit, you know, it was over.
At the end there?
Michael?
Do you have a... Sorry to include you again.
Come on, buddy.
No, you guys already talked about the game. I would agree with the Tony Hawk one. I mean, I didn't have many game systems growing up. When we got PlayStation, that was a huge deal in my house. And, yeah, so Tony Hawk was really revolutionary in my household. Just all the different modes or the different gameplays you could do, like, you know, going after the secret items and everything, just all the additional features that they included in the game was just a huge deal to me.
And did you?
I mean, I'm going to bring in some PC games. I felt
please.
Like Wolfenstein was a sick game, right? It was, and you're walking through this world, and I was like, okay, I can kind of conceptualize how they made this, right? It's a series of mazes, and you turn, and someone jumps out at you. There was a little bit of blood in it, even though it was pixelated, which, you know, when you're like a kid, you're like, that's cool. I can't believe I blew that guy's face off, and I shot a dog, right?
The dog bark's still haunting
I shot a German Shepherd, though, right? So I bet that would be infinite. infinitely playable now. And then at the total under end of the spectrum, though, because playability, I think, is really important here, that you can go back to it and pick it up. You can go back to, like, original Atari and play, remember the game Combat, right, with the tanks and biplanes and, like, ships and stuff. And that gameplay is hard to master. It has no story. The graphics are not what it's about. It's like you have this stick and you're trying to get this thing to move correctly. And then there's like moments where you're invisible. So it's just this basic bunch of blocks on the screen. You're like, I'm just gonna start peppering because I don't know where this guy is, which is like spamming the keyboard in Fortnite, right? That's where it started. Oh, that's the everything was on the shoulders of Combat.
Combat. Yeah. Combat was the beginning of it all. The downfall of society. Yeah. So we're talking a lot about gameplay and graphics, all very important, obviously, to video games. But storytelling, like that's become now a big part of it. How do you weigh the importance of graphics against other elements in gaming, like the story or these things like the open worlds or the playing online with a bunch of other people? Like, what has become more important to you over the years?
Dude, for me, 100% storytelling. Storytelling is the key to everything. You can't have a game has replayability. That's great, but if you want to engage in it, you want to immerse yourself in it. It has to have a good story. That's what I don't play Fortnite. I don't understand the whole concept of like enjoying battle royale. It's like, dude, it's like who cares? Mm-hmm. I want to be able to go through this whole experience and grow my character and grow my skills as I play. Otherwise, it's just, you can just spam over and over and over and over and over again. But then again, there's also this thing of, like, making it too cinematic, where you get, like, Call of Duty and, like, half the game is, like, cutscenes. And you're like, bro, come on. Like, I could just go watch Extraction 2 on Netflix if I want to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's just play the game, right? You know? Yeah. So there is a big piece of it. Without a good story, though, you don't have anything. Even the original Mario has, like, a story to it, right? Yeah. So, like, one of my favorite games doesn't have a story, but it's so playable. Duck Hunt is, like, one of the best. Dude, I know.
There's a story. There's a story there. Kill that dog if you can.
Yes, everyone wants to shoot the dog. But, like, certain games like that, you could play over and over again without the story. But then there are games now where you play it one time, and you go, I'm never going to play this again, right? But then there's games like Fallout 3, like Fallout 3 or Fallout New Vegas or something like that, where you're just like, dude, I want to go back to that world and live in that world and be in that world. I think that's the most important part of a game is how much do you want to be part of that world? How much do you want to be immersed in that world? If you don't want to be immersed in that world, then you're not going to play it that much, right? That's why games like you talked about playing like online, like World of Warcraft did well, right? Because you live in that world. You are that character for that time period that you're there. And that's the biggest point of games. Plus, games are supposed to challenge you. And if you don't get challenged, if it's just easy or the same repetitive task over and over again, how bored are you going to get? You know what I'm saying? So for me, it's story, though, over everything.
Yeah, I agree. You took all my words, but
sorry.
How dare you? Metal Gear Solid 1, like you said. That to me, to this day, still stands out with the best storytelling, but the worst graphics by today's standards. But I will literally put that on a great high-def 4K TV, and I don't care, because I think the story is amazing. The voice acting, to this day, in 2023, it still stands out as just an amazing, amazing game. So I think definitely story is a huge, huge thing. You can have, which we'll, I'm sure, get into as we talk further, but a retro-looking game, even if it's made today, with an amazing story, you do not care what it looks like, as long as it looks beautiful enough to look at and you are engaged to storytelling.
Well, yeah, I'll jump in real quick so the microphone doesn't get slim from my face again. but no, as far as I agree 100% with the whole idea that the story of the game will undermine or will really dictate the success of the game. But as far as the whole notion of graphics is concerned, like using Mortal Kombat as an example, like that's a game that, you know, while there is a story mode, people play the, you know, matchup almost exclusively for the graphics, because the graphics have come along so far in the years since the game was first invented, and so now people can do the whole X-ray vision mode as you just completely demolish your opponent, and that's just a fun aspect of the game. So while I think the story holds the, real key to the game's success. I think the evolution and the advancement of the graphics of the games have really allowed more games to come to the forefront and capture people's imaginations.
I'm glad Mike brought that up, because while I was listening to all these guys, I'm like, wow, did these guys never play Madden? Did you guys literally never play Flight Simulator? I think that's the big kink in this conversation right now is, yeah, when I think of those games, I'm like, sure, you can play the old school Madden, and I think of that 20 years ago was the Madden 2004. If you're Michael Vick, everyone hated you because you had QB speed rating of 95 and could do whatever you wanted.
That's right.
But for those games, though, that fan base, you know, that demographic has always been, they strive for realism. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think those are kind of those genres where you can't really go back to some of those pixelated graphics and, you know, where's the puck on the screen? I can't see it. Like, you kind of need some of that high def.
Dude, do you not remember, like, the old school football game that on Nintendo?
Tecmo Bowl for the win.
You still can go back and play that. Stuff.
I feel like you can go back to some of the, like, the old school sports games, like NHL hockey 95 through 98. I remember there was a buddy of mine from high school called it the S shot. The bad word, I won't use it here. Kids in the audience. But like where you could skate up and just every time you could score by having the stick hit the sort of the goalpost. But so like a theme here, I think that I'm pulling out, if you'll allow me to, is that sometimes the storytelling is important for self-challenging and progression.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's about your ability to work the keys, right? The keyboard or the controller, and that crosses into multiplayer games. And I think when we look at the gaming industry, they've figured out that there's a hybrid. People want the storytelling, and they want the multiplayer and your ability to spam the keys or whatever. So like Star Wars Battlefront, for example, there's a story, Battlefront 2 or whatever. There's a story and there's a game, right? And those two things are combined, as opposed to like Castlevania, there was just one story, you went left to right, or Zelda, right? And so I think it's progression, and then it's also skill, and a combination of those two are the things that draw people in and keep them coming back.
That could be a genre thing too, though. Too like a sports game is going to be like, you don't need a story in the sports game. I mean, unless you're playing like a WWE game, right? Then you definitely need a story mode, right? Because otherwise it sucks. But like if you're playing like Wayne Gretzky or you're playing like any sports game, it doesn't matter. But if you're going to play like a first-person shooter or some kind of like side scroller or like genre type game, action game, you're going to need a storyline. So yeah, I guess that makes sense. I can see where you're coming from there.
I think personally, Madden needs more meet cutes. I'd play a lot more Madden.
That's the new case. One with the Taylor Swift thing.
Dude. Just wanted to add, we talked about like story gameplay, Final Fantasy, right? The whole
which one?
Franchise. Well, 7. I don't know which one you're talking about.
That's
7.
Right.
That game in itself developed. You know, the fact that the gameplay or the storyline was so great, but it's, I don't know, for me, it's one of those. When you play it, you finish it. I don't know if I'm ever going to go back to playing Final Fantasy VII again, but guess what?
Chocobo
Final Fantasy VIII will come out, or a new one will come out, and it'll make you want to play the next one, right? So
you're not going to go back and race? Like Chocobo Racing over?
Chocobo
over?
Racing,
Chocobo all day long.
I mean, I go all the way back to Final Fantasy II. That was like my first real storytelling experience that made me cry while playing a video game. Yeah. When those two twins turned themselves to stone. Anybody?
Anybody? I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Or did I just spoil something?
No, dude, you can't spoil.
Dude, it's been 40 years.
Come on.
You can leave.
There was a weird point in time where, I guess we have to figure out how to place it, where, in the OG kind of really early games, it was about getting a top score, right? It was kind of that arcade thing. Yeah. And then somewhere along the line, that ended, right? And you would compete with your friends to get the top score in Pac-Man or whatever it was, Galaga
they still,
or something.
They still had it. I think it was Tetris, right? So Tetris was, they were going out, and I think they still have it to this day where you try to get the highest score or person with the highest score, there's four trophies levels that are given. That's wild.
Well, look what saved the video game arcade industry, a story-based game, right? From all those high scoring point games to Dragon's Lair, which I never played because it was too much money and too intense for me as a kid. But I'm going to combine two of these questions because I feel like there's a little bit going on here. there's recent games that intentionally adopt a retro style, and we see that a lot with indie games, this resurgence of that sort of old school feel. Do these games contribute to the retro vibe for you? Do you think they're kind of use a unique blend of old and new? Do they capture that earlier era for you when you play these kind of new indie? I play a lot of these indie games, and I find a lot of them very fun and well made. But let's jump down into the mix, please. Michael, you want to go first this time?
All right, I guess so. Thank you. Unfortunately, I haven't kept up with the gaming system too much these days. I feel like every time, you know, the year rolls around, there's a new system. But I did get to spend some time recently up north with family, and so I was spend some time playing the Nintendo Switch, which gave me kind of nostalgia for the retro game to an extent. So I was playing, you know, Mario Kart and Super Mario Party with my siblings and nephews up there. And so it's kind of an interesting mix. I don't know. It just, for me personally, it just gives me the feeling of nostalgia, just seeing, like, the idea of the game with the higher definition and the better graphics. But the underlying game mode is still there. So I think it's a cool way for kind of a new generation of fans to be exposed to games that we kind of grew up with in a better or like, a, yeah, the graphics at least is something that they're comparable to, and it's a way to introduce them to something that you knew as a kid and kind of bring them into that whole experience.
When you say indie games, you're talking about like Among Us and stuff like that? Because that's what I think of when I think of like a retro vibe indie game, and it's like a very popular game. I see my kids play it. I don't play that game, but I see my kids play that game all the time, or even like my nieces and nephews playing Roblox, you know, or like my kids even started playing The Sims, and I'm like, well, how old are you? Because like, do you guys remember The Sims? You're just like, what? Like, they're bringing that back. And so I think it's a genre that will always be there because, one, it's not hard to create those kinds of games, so you can get them out faster, right? You don't need the best graphics to get to the work. Among Us doesn't have good graphics. It's like we would all say that's not that good of a graphically game, even though you're playing it on like your iPhone or your iPad or whatever. It's not that great, but it's a fun game. And also, I think, as you brought up, playing with other people is what has changed gaming, has made gaming so much more fun, right? Like, I do miss having all your friends over, ordering some Little Caesars and having like a bunch of like soda, right? And staying up all night and playing, you know, Super Mario Brothers or Zelda or Karate Kid on NES, bro. I don't care what anybody says. Excitebike, right? Playing all that stuff on there.
Excitebike.
You know what I'm saying? Like playing these games, like staying up late. That was a communal experience, but now the communal experience is online and it's everywhere all at once, and you can play with anyone. You could be playing with somebody in like Australia or whatever. It doesn't matter. And I think that's the part that's made gaming get better. Not the graphics, not any of that other stuff, but the ability to still have community, because that's one of the last places you have community is gaming. I think we've lost a lot of community in places, and the best part of gaming, at least when I was a kid, was being able to hang out with all your friends and sit down and pass that controller around and play those games together, you know? So, yeah.
Yes. Yes. By the way,
no, sorry, I got all the stops.
Mic drop. That was. I'm so proud of you. I would say to recommend to even my co-hosts of the podcast, but anybody that has not played, play Octopath Traveler, play Axiom Verge. Those are amazing freaking games. This is like a throwback to Metroid or, you know, we're talking like any RPG, Octopath Traveler, that's worthwhile, you know. So I would say going back to this, play those games, play the hell out of it. It's a visceral experience. It is something that transports you back, but it's fresh and new. It's not, you know, something you have to hunt down that's over $100 because it's a collector's item or have to dust off and play it on a CRT TV. You can play it on your HD, you know, TV or your Nintendo Switch. But, yeah, I would say those are what I would go answering your question would be the newer stuff that throws it back.
Yeah, James, I just want to say I think you hit the nail on the head on this one.
Thank you.
You know,
yeah, he did.
Someone has to agree with you here, right?
Thank you. No,
I can't believe he came around.
I know. He did come around. It's slowly happening.
You're right.
I love the progression. But yeah, Among Us is one thing I thought of. Yeah. Again, I mentioned F-099 earlier. My wife would hate me if I didn't mention Tetris because she's awesome at it and kicks my butt at it.
Game rocks, dude.
But there's one underlying theme with all those games, and you were just talking about it, though, and it's the two-letter word, social competition.
Yeah.
We lost a lot of that in-person social competition. It's two words, right? It's a lot more syllables, but yeah. Anyway, it's the social competition, though, and I think that is so key to the enjoyment of these games, and that is what they all have. Yeah.
Can I say GoldenEye? I mean that yeah, come on.
Yeah,
GoldenEye. We got only one guy.
Odd job.
Come on.
GoldenEye is great.
Everybody else.
That was
on.
That was community.
When GoldenEye came out.
That was community.
That was like
that was the game. Man.
I'm sorry, but I don't know if I completely agree with the online thing because I think that this whole couch co-op thing is something I still to this day wish was more of a thing, and I'm seeing it's just more online. But like, you know, to your point, James, you know, going over even a sleepover as grown man adults, like just doing that would be like fun to just all nighter playing a game that we could all sit together without having to be at home or at another part of the country. You could be hanging out with, you know, moi.
I never get invited, so I don't know about that. Right?
Yeah. But a 4-player split screen, when I see that to this day, it's really cool.
Yeah. Oh, 4-player
screen. Agreed. 4-player split screens rule.
Damien's a screen looker.
Don't look at my screen. That's why you got to play Smash Brothers, dude. You got to figure it out. Have fun.
Yeah.
I can't play Smash Brothers.
Oh really?
I have a hard time keeping up with that.
Dude, that game is so awesome.
It's chaos, right? Anybody with me? Anybody my age and just can't handle it? Okay. Yeah. Good. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
You look like you would play Smash Brothers and kill it all the time. Oh, wow. That's so long.
All right. So all ages have issues with that game. Good. We just a couple more minutes here before we go to Q&A. So this is going to be a quick one. Because I got sick recently, and I went back to play Zelda 2, and I was like, meh. And I played Link to the Past instead, just because it wasn't as boring. And I love Zelda 2. I love Zelda 2, but I was not in the headspace. So does nostalgia influence our perception of retro games? How does it do that? Are we sometimes blinded by the fond memories of the past? Or do these games genuinely hold up in today's gaming landscape?
I guess I'll jump in it. Yeah, nostalgia, to me, it's why we keep coming back to these games. We could, you know, move on to the next one again when we were, you know, younger and, you know, there was the console wars and you had your PS1 and a PS2 came out, or you had a Nintendo and then a Super NES came out. You wanted the new one. For me, I have family in the Philippines, and whenever we got, my brother and I have an older brother, whenever we got a new system, my grandparents were like, okay, well, let's give your old system to your cousins in the Philippines. They'll enjoy it. They'll play it. And I'm like, sure, why not? Like, that's that to me, that was, you know, that's part of just, I guess, either my upbringing or whatever. Like, we shared it to my cousins who didn't have it in the Philippines. But I guess to lead to that, the nostalgia piece is why I have the Nintendo Switch, because I could play all those consoles even though I don't have it, but I still go back to it regardless of what the game is, you know. So it brings you back to that special time about when you were, again, you know, you just got home from school and you want to play this game, or you want to play it with your friends, you want to have the sleepovers or Blockbuster nights, or you would go to Blockbuster and you would rent a game.
And, don't make me cry.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Get your pizza, get your Mountain Dew, and you guys have fun. You know, those things are like cool core memories that I can say that I've experienced, and why I still play certain games today, because I'm like, oh man, like playing with my daughters now, these games, and I'm like, oh yeah, she's like, can you help me beat this game? And I'm like, sure, but here, but the fact that she also wants to play it, which is cool. She's like, doesn't want to play all the other newer games, but I still love it, and I think that's really what it is, the nostalgia piece and just bringing that core memory out. But yeah.
I'll definitely agree too. I have a big problem with this on the podcast, because if anyone's are, you know, here listeners of the podcast, you know that we give a lot of game reviews on Retro Gaming Net podcast, and so when we do this, I have difficulty with separating nostalgia with, okay, but is it really a good game? Because after a while, I start realizing this game is kind of shitty, but I have such good memories with it that I will fight tooth and nail over how much I love it. With that being said, I think that if you can't get teary-eyed over a retro game and have it mean something to you because of nostalgia, then, you know, it may not be for you. It may not be something that you will dive in further, because with nostalgic games, there comes a lot of feeling with it, a lot of passion. And that's how the podcast started. It was just, you know, a guy that I knew, a buddy of mine, literally tearing up over a long story of his life with his parents and his brother committing suicide over the memories of a great time when he had a great game. And it just, that's when it hit me and I knew, like, this is an amazing idea to dive in with people to talk about it, because it's not just a game anymore with nostalgia. There's a lot of memories and a lot of great things tied to it.
Yeah, I think you guys are hit, yeah. Just going to carry on with this theme, and I think with nostalgia, it really just comes down to emotional attachment, right? Yep. It's what does it bring back for you? I know for me, when I hear the Sega, like, I get excited, right? Or when I hear, finish him, like, dude, I'm going to freaking finish this guy, right? Like, there's something about hearing certain things that just gets you going, you know, blood pumping, and gets you really excited, and yeah, it's definitely that emotional attachment, like you guys said, and that's, I think, so important.
I think there's also a dimension here of the more immersive modern game is. I think that on a spectrum, you're less likely to have the nostalgia because you're so focused on this is the flip side of the coin of what we were talking about earlier about being part of that world. When you were playing older games that we might describe as retro, on the other end of the spectrum, the things that we're talking about are the pizza, the gathering, the Coke or Pepsi, right? It's like that the opening scenes of E.T. where they're talking, you know, where they're playing Dungeons and Dragons, and you're like, you have this sort of filter, like almost a cinematic filter, as you're thinking back and trying to recapture those motions, those emotions, right? Those moments. And then the more immersive the game becomes, if it's not social, it's difficult to almost picture what was going on in that time. Like, do you remember a Fortnite game from 2 years ago versus, you know, versus playing, what was it, like Super TNC Surf Shop or something, right?
Oh, yeah. Good times. Good times.
No, that's good. Peter, that's exactly right. Like, I think, like, the nostalgia is, like, the biggest piece. I mean, I still own an NES and an SNES. Like, I own both those of my own, dude. And I own all the games. And I have a PS3 and a PS4. Like, there are games that, like, the reasons I won't get rid of those consoles is because of maybe one or two games. Like, literally, there's a Beavis and Butthead game on SNES, bro.
I remember that.
I don't know how many, yeah, dude. So many people don't even know that exists. There's a Spawn game on SNES. Okay?
I remember that.
It's one of the few reasons, and, you know, some of the Super Mario games, but, like, those are the main reasons I own SNES. And to own regular Nintendo is for Zelda, the gold cartridge, which I own.
Oh.
It's like, yeah, like, these are the reasons I own it. Great. The love of that, the passion, the things that happened in my life at those time periods, that's what makes games stick to you. It's just like movies. Like, those things will stick with you because of what happened to you at the time you were engaged in those events.
Fire, fire.
So I always appreciate a good Beavis and Butthead invitation. But no, I mean, everyone's already captured this point. But yeah, as far as the retro games are concerned, is 100% about the nostalgia, and just it takes you back to those memories, those times, everything that you experienced. But as far as, like, the question if the games hold up, I mean, you just have to appreciate the games for what they were. I mean, obviously these games made 20, 30, 40 years ago, you know, and obviously the technology was limited at the time, but for those of us that played it at that time will always appreciate it for what it was. Obviously, I don't feel like kids today would appreciate the 8, you know, bit, you know, games that we grew up on, the Duck Hunt and the Super Mario Kart and all the fun stuff. But again, yeah, that, I think that's what holds these games so close to a lot of people's hearts, is just the memories, as everyone's already pointed out, just the game nights and what it used to be to be a kid and just hang out with your friends.
To be clear, we made it to the last 5 minutes before someone dropped a kids today.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's very, that's, we did,
we're talking
we
about
did,
retro
we did well.
Games, I feel like that's
we did
fully
well.
Valid.
Yeah, no, it is. So, completely. I just thought we'd lead with it.
So we're gonna jump to Q&A now. Anybody have questions for any of our panelists? Oh, there's one.
iPad is great.
Do you think that that's on its way out forever, or is there anything that the gaming community can do to, like, make sure that we keep couch co-op? Because I feel like it's super important.
Indie games, because I think it's really on its way out, as much as I really, really dislike it. To this day, I mean, I want to introduce so many games to my girlfriend who has had a background in gaming, but it's more like new stuff that comes out. Well, I can't play with her at home on my couch co-op, you know, playing the same game. I have to have two different Nintendo accounts or a PlayStation account. You have to play online. One that I think she would absolutely love is Splatoon. Like, I absolutely love that game. It is, like, the best. If you have OCD, that is an amazing, amazing game. Yeah. But to play it next to somebody with you is a little bit, you know, you have to have another Nintendo Switch. You have to have a different account. You have to be online. So it's like I miss that. I miss the old days of just popping something in as far as a game and just going at it, you know. So I think to answer your question, I think it is on its way out.
I hope it's not on its way out. I hope that things like Dungeons & Dragons being popular again, or even Magic the Gathering, will bring that back to people where we go, okay, this generation, this is the thing that we like to do, even though it's not a game, right? It's not a physical, you know, digital game. Maybe that'll bring it back to where people go, hey, we should all gather around and play this game. And you'll get those more four-person games. That's why I didn't like Fallout 76, right? You have to, like, go and play. There's no, like, one-player version of it. There's no way to, like, co-op with it, anything like that, where you're just forced to be online. You're forced to play in a multiplayer world sometimes. It's not as fun. So I hope it comes back. And I'm hoping that, you said, indie games will be the way to go. Or we just bring back a bunch of NES games.
Yeah, if you're a game designer, start Couch Co-op Studios. There you go. Crank out
idea.
Couch Co-op.
You're right here first.
Right?
Actually, I've come across bars that do that have the arcade bar set up, and they'll host or they'll sponsor game nights. So I don't know if there's a way for the game industries to collage with these kind of bars that are encouraging people to come out, but I feel like there's definitely a social media platform, or there's a way to do it, but there would definitely have to be a lot of effort put behind it to keep the whole gameplay thing going.
Yeah, the one game this kind of reminds me of, and I'm hoping it just continues this couch co-op, as you called it, was Mario Wonder that just recently came out. It's the first game that I've recently started playing with my daughter, and I will say it's a lot more fun to play co-op than it is online. But they do have that online feature, though, right? And so I think the one thing, though, that we didn't mention that I think is kind of out the door, though, is strict linear gameplay.
Absolutely.
I think that's the one thing in this industry. Yeah, it's no longer existent. Everyone is ADD. They want to be able to, interact with their world. And so I think that's the one thing that's actually going to be diminished.
Interesting. Cool. Thanks, everyone. We have time for one more quick question, I think. Sure, at the back, yeah.
So, talking on retro games, there's also the new wave of things, like a lot of remasters, remakes coming out. You mentioned before how there is Final Fantasy VII, and that it's coming out with like almost a three-part remake. What are your thoughts on that? Does that just diminish then what it originally was, or is that really bring into perspective like the new generation to the games?
All right, I'm jumping in, boys. I have a major issue with what you just brought up. So FF7 is one of my greatest games of all time. Now, when it comes to a remaster, this is kind of like my personal view with the podcast. I think that has to be a cutoff for, because we review a lot of games, so the question is like, what's a retro game, right? PS1 to me would be one of the ones that would still stay retro to me. It goes all the way up to 360, and the reason why I say that, Xbox 360 and PS3, is that we have so many remasters, remakes, that I'm not going to toss away my old Arkham Asylum on PS3. You know why? Because I loved it, and I still will hook it up. And if I still have that old CRT and it still has that connection, I'm going to throw it on. So therefore, to me, it becomes retro. I think to answer your question, I think it's going to continue to do that, and it really pisses me off, because when we got a game back in the day, we didn't have to rely on download updates. We didn't have to rely on, oh, wait, dude, we're going to change one little thing. I mean, you got it in the box, and that was it. So FF7 to me was a glorious three-disc, journey, and I'm just pissed that this remake is just taking so long to get, multiple parts release, and they're just sucking more money out of me. I'm sorry, I'm gonna stop now.
You have rattled the snake. The snake is now rattling.
How do you really feel? How do you really feel?
Right? Let me tell you.
No, it's good.
Anyone else? Answer to that?
Dude, I'm always down for remakes, because that means more game to play. So I'm not gonna complain about it. But yeah, I do miss. I always love the original OG Final Fantasy VII. So keep, if they make them and it's still good and it's still playable and fun, let's do it. I'm down. That's why I want Kai Patterson to make me some more movies, too.
Yeah, there you go.
Remakes always work for me.
Nice. Yeah. No, I played Resident Evil 2 recently, the remake, and it scared the bejesus out of me. So I'm incredibly happy they remade that. It was great. Anybody else answering? No? Okay. I think I think that's it. We'll go down and say where you can find us. I'm Philip Kelly. I guess I'm a comedian, an actor, writer, etc. You can find me at Philip Creates or Popsicle Pod on social media. That's POPSKL.
And I'm Earl Lawrence. You can find me on the Retro Game podcast and also on Instagram, Earl Lawrence. Or hey, Earl Lawrence.
Hey. Instagram, Damien_DiCarlo and Retro Game Night podcast.com. Definitely check it out. I think you guys might like that.
And obviously, I'm the player 3 here. You can find me also at Retro Game Night podcast, or you can find me at Monday Night, the Golden Nugget Pub in Simi Valley.
Golden Nugget, doing shout. Trivia. Limerick, shout.
And other than that, yeah, at Michael Losey is my Instagram too as well. So.
Gregory McNeil, you can find me on all socials at Gregory McNeil, or you can find me in the club.
Wait, 50 Cent? Jeez Louise. All right, you can find me at JD Creviston Comedy or at the Clean Comedy Podcast. I'm a comedian or probably at a comedy club near you in LA or around the country.
Mine's pretty simple. Pretty much all my social media is just at SoCal Armstrong. And if you're looking for anything else, go see Hunger Games in theaters. My name will be there in the credits somewhere. That's me, Rebecca.
Thank you guys.
Thank you guys.
Have a great con.
Thanks for coming out, everybody. Thank you. Hopefully you enjoyed. If you have more questions, find us outside.